You are listening to episode 130 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. This is Virtually Reality.
Episode 130 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 21st, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my bracket-busting brother, James Furlough.
That's right. I think you got the date wrong, though. Did you say the 21st?
Mm-hmm. I know what you're thinking is, like, don't you guys normally record on a Sunday, which would be the 23rd? And yeah, we normally would. But we're not. We're going 2 days early, because James is a punk.
Because on Sunday I'm not anywhere near home, and so it's all good.
Has it stopped?
Yeah,
I've been around the world.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
I get the reference there. I have no idea how to tie it in with basketball, but did you fill out a bracket? There we go. I'm just gonna go for it.
There we go. I didn't. I did not. I kept thinking, oh, I want to be in for my $1 billion, mm-hmm. And didn't. I don't do brackets generally because I think I'm morally opposed to gambling.
Okay.
I know. I'm just kidding. No.
So we do have a lot to talk about today. Like, we're going to talk about the 5 second rule and Secret and Android Wear. And cosmic inflation. So we have a lot that we're going to talk about. But before we get to any of that, too, have you seen the new 538 blog with Nate Silvers that has recently come out?
No.
So Nate Silvers is the guy who called the presidential election perfectly.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Yeah, he's that guy. And so he's now has a blog called 538, which is a subsidiary of ESPN. And so they put together a bracket based on data, you know, with percentages and everything, and said, here's who we think is going to win. And, you know, combine that with Warren Buffett giving the $1 billion giveaway. People are like, oh, yeah, I got this totally. And then Duke had to go and lose. Ah, messing everybody up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, literally.
That happened.
In the last 12 years, Yahoo says that, like, nobody has gotten the first round perfect. Much less the entire thing. I mean, it's a near impossibility. And it's funny because I've read some stuff on it. And they're like,
I bet you that Biff Buchanan got it right.
Probably, you're right. I'll bet he did. That explains so much of that movie.
Second time.
Oh my gosh! Actually, yeah. Wow. It's weirdly. It could be weirdly accurate. That's what this whole thing is. Warren Buffett realizes the time is now. This year, it has to happen. We got that like fake video with the fake video. I'm using my air quotes with the hoverboard. We got like people running serious money betting on sports stuff. Dude, it's happening. Back to the Future is happening. Everybody's conspiring. It's awesome.
Great Scott.
Yeah, exactly. No, I've read some stuff and they're like, it's actually way harder than like part of what Warren Buffett has going for him is that like, not only are the odds astronomical if you were just to play the odds, but nobody's just playing the odds. It's not a bunch of people randomly trying to win the lottery. It's a bunch of people trying to selectively predict the future. And so the fact is that, you know, the truth of the matter is that the way that we determine our national championship college basketball team, which is kind of ridiculous that we do that to begin with, but the way we do it is probably the worst way to do it because it's a single round elimination and you're not determining the best team.
Right. That's always been the
best
criticism.
Team is not the what?
That's always been the criticism. But come on, it's not just about that.
Well, no, it's entertainment. It's an exciting show. That's all I care about. Is the TV show good? Then great. Let's keep doing it that way. But I'm saying the problem is that you're trying to win a lottery not based like with, and you're using all of this data to determine who's best, who's more likely to win, when it's probably the worst way to actually determine who will be the one who goes forward. And most of us would be better off, like, chances, you know that if anybody wins, it's going to be some, you know, secretary mom who, like, is part of the office, you know, thing. Like, it was her job to put, you know, she just randomly guessed, and she's going to become a billionaire overnight. Because that, you know.
Well, I do know that, was it last year or 2 years ago, they were interviewing some dude. He was, like, 14 years old, and he won the ESPN or one of the brackets, you know, where they had hundreds of thousands of people. And he called it the closest. And so he won, and, you know, it was a few thousand dollars for winning. And so they interviewed him, and like, how did you do it? And he's like, dude, I just watch every single game. And I kind of knew this and this and this and this. And I mean, and I looked at that and went, wow, that kid's a stat junkie. That's pretty awesome. But it's like, so, you know, so he did well because he knew it, and he called a lot of the upsets because he was like, you know, because part of it's not just your record. It's how well you're playing stepping into the tournament, you know, which, yeah, it's, but it's interesting. So you should check out the blog, 538. It's like a stats-focused blog, just in general. And since it's owned by ESPN, they talk a lot about sports, too.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, you know, sports is a stats-driven, you know, it's a, what do they call it? It's Dungeons awesome. And Dragons for jocks.
Yeah, totally. Or the soap opera of sports, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Which we don't get into here. We don't. What we talk about, and what we'll be talking about this week, like every week, is technology and the continuing, not sports opera, but corporate opera.
Yeah.
And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations dealing back and forth. Interesting part about that. Soap operas were called soap operas because they sold soap.
That's true.
We don't actually sell much yet, so we're working on that. but we'll be... when we talk about corporations, talking about the people working for them, the people are their dealings back and forth, their marketing campaigns, and of course, last but not least, the technology that they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
Yes, I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice. That's good because I'm the one who's going to bring up the HP article this week. And it's even going to come off. I'm going to say this.
Tease it out. If
you regularly listen to this show, I will tell you I'm bringing up an article about HP, and it's going to be nice. It's not going to be mean. If just knowing me, you should know what that article's about already. If you wanna follow us throughout the week, follow all what we're doing in our cool lives off screen, whether we're going down to LA to go and serve the needy or we're going down to LA to go and party for birthdays, which is what both of us will be doing next weekend. you can follow us on our other social media accounts. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram, where you can see pictures of it all, will be next Wigan 4. Where are you at, James?
I am at James Furlow on Twitter, and I am jamesfurlow.com on the web.
Cuckoo, ka-choo. And if you want to see all sorts of cool stuff that we're doing throughout the week, we post all of the article links. All the articles we talk about, we post links to on our website. We also put links to the podcast and show cuts and YouTube and all sorts of stuff. Great hub of – it is the hub of our universe. It is the sun to our solar system. And that URL is furloughbros.com. So go there, check it out, spend time. Copy and paste it into emails and text messages and Facebook posts. Share it with all of your friends and family. Get crazy.
So before we get into with the tech news, I saw this and I had to share it. Get the word out. 5-second rule has actually been backed by science.
I know. You know what the worst part about this is?
So awesome.
Yeah. I read a BuzzFeed article. I've decided I hate the HuffPo and I hate BuzzFeed.
Really?
And it's not because they're bad. Like, let me be clear. If you enjoy BuzzFeed and HuffPo. Like, that's awesome, man. I'm glad for you. They're making money. They're doing their thing. Like, go for it. Enjoy life. Don't take this criticism too personally. But I've never read anything on a BuzzFeed or a HuffPo article that I clicked through on Facebook where I said, wow, that's interesting and something I didn't know already. Or I said, wow, that's definitely not wrong. And because it was like, yeah, for example, like, I read an article today. I don't even know why I click on them, because they're good titles. They're great at titles. It was like,
amazing.
13 things you didn't know about food. And one of them was, the 5-second rule is definitely not true. You know, germs can get on your food in less than 5 seconds. I was like, there was a major study released just this week saying that the 5-second. Anyways, tell me about this rule, James. Tell me, what can I do now? Can I take a piece of pizza, throw it on the ground, and as long as I pick it up in less than six seconds, I can eat it?
Yeah, you're good to go. Well, no, not totally. There was some nuance there. It kind of depends on the type of food and the type of surface. Okay, so if it's a hard surface, think wood, tile, linoleum. Nice. Those
so
tend to
kitchen,
be
generally kitchen.
The kitchen area, yes, or my living room and the rest of my house. Mm-hmm. If you live where I live, which you don't, neither does anyone listening. So,
That was a criticism. I heard that. This dog whistle politics right there.
So they say that's you're typically you could do the 5 seconds there, but then they say there's different types of foods, right? Like non-sticky foods, like toast or cookies, dried fruit. They're like, those are, yeah, you can go like anywhere between 3 and 30 seconds.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of depends on the combination.
Makes
like if it's something that's sticky,
cookies.
Like if you dropped a piece of pie on carpet, like, yeah, you're done. Just toss it. Apparently, wow. The carpet's particularly bad, too. So
yeah, it makes sense.
They're like, if you drop it on the carpet, I don't know. I mean, if it was me, you know, if it was a cookie, it was like, quick, grab it.
Cookie. You know, honestly, there are very few surfaces that I can think of where I wouldn't seriously take a long, serious thought about, like, should I eat this cookie or not? Like, public restrooms, I'm not going to eat the cookie. Asphalt? I'm going to think long and hard. How dirty is this cookie? Really brush it off a little. Just, it's a cookie.
Well, it's interesting. There's a difference between dirty and full of bacteria.
I believe it.
You know, because it's like, honestly, the asphalt, sure, it'll be dirty, but there's not going to be a lot of bacteria that are on it. Whereas carpet has a lot of bacteria. If it falls in, like, your bathroom, like you said, yeah, you shouldn't be eating food in the bathroom in general because there's so much bacteria there.
I totally never do that.
No, who does that? So anyways, I just want to share that real quick, that 5-second rule, it's legit. We're good to go.
That's awesome. You know what? Let's stick with the scientific front, but the opposite end of it. So this week there was some big news, if you weren't paying attention, but we found proof of cosmic inflation caused a trillionth of a second after the Big Bang. Oh, baby.
So tell me more.
Okay. So basically what happens is there's this – if you look at if you look at how, like, the theory, the model of the Big Bang works, there's this idea that, like, let's say you have, like, a room full of marbles that all have a tremendous amount of gravity. What you would expect is all those marbles to kind of collapse in together and to come to one point. And just the nature of how gravity and particles and weight works, you'd expect them all kind of, like, you know, collect. But obviously our universe has all sorts of stuff spinning all over the place. And in this model, all you'd have to do is remove a few of the marbles in the room, and it would cause massive distortions, and it would cause little groups to kind of build up and start moving around each other if they all had a lot of gravity. And it's this non-uniformity in the universe that we actually observe, but we see this, you know, in the solar system, but there's this weirdness of like on, you know, of what actually goes on at the moment of the Big Bang, what happens, blah, blah, blah. So there's, have you ever heard of the cosmic microwave background of the universe?
Nope.
All right, cool. I met the guy that discovered it. So it was this theoretical background radiation that would have been released at the Big Bang, right? That would be pervasive throughout the universe, and it would be this microwave radiation of a certain type, and it would have a certain power level and everything, and we theoretically should have been able to measure it. Well, and it was thought of as the telltale sign of the Big Bang. If we could prove that the Big Bang, this would be thought of as proof of the Big Bang. And so a while back, this dude who openly admits that he's not really that bright of a physicist, he's just kind of a physicist, he's not one of the he got the Nobel Peace Prize or the Nobel Prize in Physics for this, but basically what he did was he was the one sitting at the telescopic satellite radio reader thing. He was the guy sitting at the controls when they picked it up and picked up the signal for the first time. Nice. And so he gets credit for finding it. And what's really cool about it is that he's very eloquent and he's pretty charismatic and he's just good at explaining what happened. And he understands physics, although he's not like, because oftentimes you're like super smart, like theoretical physicists, either A, they don't speak English, or B, they're just like, you can't even talk to them because they can't understand why you can't understand. They're just like, they're crazy smart. And this guy was a good bridge, and so he gives really good talks and stuff. Anyways, so this was thought of as the signature of the Big Bang, proof that the Big Bang happened. Okay, that's cool. But there's a sort of problem with it. It's that the Big Bang, this cosmic radiation, is really smooth. it's really uniform, and the rest of the universe isn't. And so everybody's like, okay, so why did that happen? Why is there this difference here? And this one physicist, he came up with this theory that he called cosmic inflation, which is basically that there, theoretically, the entire universe in the first billionth of a second, you know, trillionth of a second, went from immeasurably small, and you can't even really define how small it went, to about the size of a marble. And in that moment, it actually did it faster than the speed of light. And because it did it faster than the speed of light, it effectively smoothed out the edges of the universe of this non-uniform microwave radiation in the background, and effectively made it what we see, where at the deepest parts of the universe, everything is uniform, but everything inside is non-uniform. And it was done by this expansion. Well, once again, there has to be a telltale sign, otherwise how could you prove it? What they found was this telltale sign of graviton waves of a certain pattern. And I don't really – that's the part where you lose me. I mean, I felt pretty good for being able to keep up that long. that's what they discovered. And – it's hailed as a massive
discovery
and proof, because one of the big deals about it is obviously, you know, you're taught in early physics that, you know, nothing goes faster than the speed of light. and here we have an example of clearly the radiation moving at the speed of light was smoothed out by something moving faster than the speed of light, a wave of space moving. So that's kind of a big deal from a practical perspective of what could this mean? Well, it could mean in, you know, 10,000 years, if we figure out, you know, A, what charged this, what gave it the power, and B, how does it work? Well, maybe you could build, you know, faster than light engines and stuff like that. Which is really
warp
exciting.
Speed.
I know, but it kind of proves – it basically gives credence to a bunch of different theories and models of the universe about how we think things work, especially in that very weird space of – you know, if you know anything about the grand unifying theory of physics, which kind
totally.
Of tethers – which tethers all the laws that govern like electromagnetism, the strong and weak nuclear force, the things at the very small, and they tether those forces to the things of gravity and the macro things. It brings the big and small together. Well, there's no theory that like fits yet. String theory is one of the proposed theories, but it's not really testable. So what does that mean? Nothing. It means nothing. It's just. But anyways, what's cool is at this moment in the universe's history, everything was so small and so dense that it sort of was all things at all times. And so if you can start to put together pieces of what you actually think happened there, you can start to extrapolate out, you know, find out more about and prove more theories and push further to hopefully finding some sort of a provable grand unifying theory that will lead us to, I don't know, probably making weapons that will end up destroying ourselves completely one day. Knowing our history. But you know, hopefully you know, surviving the death of our son and, you know, exploring the universe and that sort of stuff, that's the cool side. Tearing open the universe, right, and ending everything, that's kind of the downside of what we might be doing. Who knows? So I don't know, just it's, you know, good old-fashioned science, and it's just fascinating basically. But what's, yeah, so we saw light going in a pattern that we expected. That's actually what we did. This week we announced it. Yay!
Cool.
But seems significant.
Yeah, definitely seems significant. Huh. All right, I got a couple things to share with you.
Okay, tell me.
Here's the first one. I went a whole week without a panic attack. It was like a vacation. I almost didn't recognize myself. So I know I've already forgotten the me who didn't panic all the time such a long time ago. But I love and like myself now, too.
I'm glad to hear that, James. That's
next.
Awesome. Okay.
I may not agree with anything she stands for, and might be fine if we never spoke again. But when I eat 15 cookies in one sitting, I am reminded that I am indeed my mother's daughter, whether I want to be or not.
That is an interesting confession.
How about this one? Don't
the 15
confuse,
cookies is not
ooh, this
the
is a friend
part,
of a friend. Don't confuse luck with talent. The Valley and SF are full of people who can't tell the difference.
Now that is a telling of what we do, because I would completely agree with that.
This one from Oklahoma. You'll know I'm mad or something is bothering me when I become a cleaning freak. Another one from California here. I usually rush into work early on Fridays, not because I like Friday, or if I get in early I can leave early, but because I want to get the best donut before they're all gone.
Yeah.
And behind this text is a picture of donuts. It's kind of furry or blurry, I guess. Blurry is what I wanted to say. I know we had talked about it. I ended up downloading the secret app.
Nice.
Signing up for it. So those are different secrets. Another pretty funny one, which I'm pretty sure is fake, but, you know, I don't know. It says, sometimes I just get really, really tired. And it's a picture of this little kid totally conked out with President Obama, like, pointing at him.
Yeah. Well, that's how we're going to say. What's funny about that is that's a real picture, but... obviously a fake confession.
Yes.
It's interesting. It's basically post-secret is what it is, but, you know, updated for modern technology. Instead of sending in a postcard to an internet site.
So you do that, and then people can comment on them, and the comments are also anonymous. They randomly assign new avatars for each time you... for each post, they're all randomly assigned, so that if you get into a conversation with someone, you know, you'll know that's the same person. But each time, it's a different token.
Right.
But yeah, so I downloaded it. Did you check it out?
I did, and I was glad to find out that everything I'd read. Like, I don't know.
The first few posts I read were horribly depressing.
Oh, yeah, that is like one side of it. But nobody really explained what it was. And that was what in the news media. That's what irritated me. Like, I had a complete misconception of what it was, where it's people posting it. Like, it's literally, it's Twitter for, it's an anonymous Twitter. And so people are encouraged to post, you know, difficult to share secrets. And into, you know, anonymously into the world. And so, and people share them and like them, and, you know, and so it's, there's some sort of, you know, mass curation that goes along with it. It's interesting enough. I mean, it's sort of like reading Poe's secret, and it makes me, you know, every time I read those, I always want to come up with a good secret. And then I realize that's just kind of twisted. Like, you know, I guess my thing is if it's a secret enough where I can't share it, you know, if there's something that I feel like I should tell friends, family, or I want to share but I can't for whatever reason, I just feel like putting it online like that, I don't know. It's not even a practical reason of afraid somebody will figure it out. Because usually there's like part of it is you want people to know, but I feel like if I don't want people to know, I don't want people to know. This is how you know that I'm a well-trained liar. Because you never break character if you don't want to get caught. I like to pretend like it's some sort of a moral, like, I feel like if there's something I need to keep secret from friends and family, then I need to keep it secret from everybody. But I think the reality of it is it gives me a sick, twisted feeling because I realize that I'm starting to break. If it's something that I can't keep secret, it's something that I shouldn't be keeping a secret, I guess, is what, you know, from a practical perspective. And that's just me personally. But it's interesting to read. And the big question there is always, are these real or the fake? You know, is it people just trying to post something to get attention? I think a lot of them are real.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know.
Or like someone was having fun with the photo.
Right. And I know that was something that Post Secret suffered from, was just as time went on, it became there just became a tremendous amount of negative just doubt, and people didn't really believe it because it was so, some of them were so over the top. And then they started posting books, and they wanted the books to be compelling. So, you know, how much when they were going through the curation process, how much were they adding, making sure that they were good, you know, and there's just a lot of, I think that's what these types of apps suffer from, is that especially something with a ranking system, because now it's not just, is the site interesting or not, it's, you know, you can feel good about, oh, that was my secret. Whether or not it's true, and it's all anonymous, and, you know, and so I don't know. I don't mean to get totally down on it, but it's just you know, they're making money, so who am I to criticize? But
yeah, I'll probably hold on to it for as long as it's cool, but not visit it very often.
Exactly.
Of course, that's the other nice part about it, is you don't feel compelled to visit it all the time, because you're like, you're not missing any friend updates.
That's true. Or so you think. Maybe you are. Maybe you're missing the most important friend
updates.
I don't know.
It tells me if it's a friend or a friend of friend or something like that. So I know. I know these things. Yeah. I don't have very many friends who are on it. I also know that.
Yeah.
Or I should say they don't post very often.
Yeah. See, now you're asking, is anything that Matthew put, is that all in there?
Nah. Maybe.
No.
Maybe.
No.
Maybe. So, there was news this week.
Yes, there was, man.
Hence this show. Man. One of them is a project or a technology that we fully enjoy following.
Yeah.
And what is up with the TenCrunch website? Jeez, guys, figure it out. One of them has to do with timepieces.
Yeah.
Specifically, Google's newly announced Android Wear.
Yeah,
so they have reconfigured old Android to fit on a watch.
It's true.
And in classic cool. Google fashion, it looks very cartoonish.
Yeah. Looks Android-y.
Yeah. It follows their card system is kind of the way to describe it. So if you've – or not really card, but Google Now system is probably the better way to say it. So, of course, it does the normal things. You get your notification stuff. But then it will also pop up your weather if you want it. If you're getting ready to – you know, if you need to leave sometime, it'll tell you, hey, you need to leave now. One of the features that I do like about it is that you can reply via voice message. So if someone sends you a text, you can tap the red G or the clear G or whatever color it is when that happens, and reply on the spot, and it understands what you're saying because Google's really good at that, and then sends it off. And the reason why they've announced it today, because there's no hardware yet, is that they made the preview SDK available so that other developers can start doing what developers do.
Well, and in their defense, they didn't announce any hardware, but they did they didn't display any new hardware, but they did announce hardware, or one of their subsidiary partners.
Subsidiary partners?
Yeah, they're in their weird limbo between China and America.
Yeah. So Motorola is coming out with their Moto 360. And I can't remember. Is that the circular watch or the square watch?
It's the circular one. It's called the 360. Which one do you think it is?
Oh. Yeah, all right. Whatever. Yeah, so Motorola's got one. I think LG has their G watch is another one that'll be coming out shortly with it. I don't remember any dates. You know, it's whatever it is.
Summer.
Probably Google I/O then.
Yeah, I say nobody's giving any specific dates, but that is the that is kind of the announced. Hey, this is when this all going down. Summer 2014.
Yeah, so Google's officially getting into the game.
Oh man, they're heating it up.
What a surprise! I really didn't see that coming at all. I just thought they were happy with where they were at.
Really?
Kidding.
Okay. I was like, are you serious now? Because I think we need a new partner if that's the case.
No, it's quite the opposite. We all knew it was coming. It was just a matter of when.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is pretty cool. I like this. This is kind of what I was hoping for. So one of the things that we talked about back when we were first talking about the iWatch and what I wanted the iWatch to be, right? Part of it was I wanted it to be, you know, more than just a Bluetooth-enabled device where you build in your own, you know, you build an app. So don't do what the Pebble does, which is build an app that connects over Bluetooth and it kind of handles notifications through there and handles all this communication through a dedicated app. What I want is I want an OS level, you know, you call an API and the iOS would connect to the iWatch or whatever else right. Device. So that Bluetooth, you know, as long as you were connected to Bluetooth and you'd have some sort of a, you know, Apple my iPhone thing, whatever their stupid little certification thing, you'd go through that, but that would give you access to these like dedicated Bluetooth API so that you could build a watch that does stuff wherever you want it and it'll, you know, kind of communicate back. And I wanted something that kind of standardized it all and did it on an OS level, which is exactly what Google is doing. So I'm not, you know, I'm pretty excited about this. And what I think one of the things that I like about it is that, you know, obviously they're giving you an operating system, but it's going to give it some sort of a familiarity, so everything is, you know, they're doing what they did with Android, and they're doing it in a way that I really like in a really compelling way. And the other thing is that I find really exciting about this is that the Moto 360 looks awesome. You know, they've gone out of their way to design something that's very unique in that it is a round, you know, screen. The clock faces look awesome. It just looks very sleek, looks very cool. And it's got all the different features that you want. They haven't talked about battery life or charging yet, although they have said that it's going to have some super slick charging in it. And it's led some people to guess/hope that it'll be some sort of like transparent solar panel thing that you put over the LCD and you can charge that way. Yeah. Which I guess somebody, I was reading about it. It's not actually a ridiculous thing. It's somebody who has been working on that technology specifically for this sort of a thing. So, you know, maybe there's something like that. But yeah, it seems pretty cool. And one of the things that Android's all of, you know, this Android Wear is all about is it wants it to be contextually aware. so that you have the information you need when you need it. So it's sort of like the idea of, you know, why did you have a watch? It's because there was information that you wanted, and you wanted it there and at that point, right? And so you'd flip up your watch and you'd see, okay, I know what time it is. And that was the specific piece of information. Well, now they want, you know, that's what they want this to do, but with a whole lot more information. And they're going to do that with context. And so it's, you know, with where, you know, where are you going? And they have a video where they show a bunch of examples of, like, you know, giving you updates of traffic and giving you different, you know, the messages and stuff, your basic things. But they're really working on, making sure that it gives you the information when you need it, when you'd want it. And they're working with Google Now. They're highly integrated that, so that
highly your interface, integrated.
Yeah, so that your interface is, you know, there's very few, like, touching and swiping that you'd need to do, and a whole lot more talking at it. Hey, Google Watch, you know, open up my garage, which actually is, like, one of the examples they give. I think it's a little more of an infrastructure project than they infer that it would be. Yeah, but you know, in
you
principle,
don't just download
yeah,
the
I mean,
app and your garage door will open. I don't understand.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's funny.
All,
like,
you
from
need
a,
is a Wi-Fi enabled garage door, and you're good to go, right?
Right, but you know, where are you going to buy your Wi-Fi enabled garage door, James?
I don't know. I feel like those exist.
They should exist. It should exist, but you know what does exist?
Opportunity
relatively
knocking.
But yeah. You get a SparkCore Wi-Fi enabled Arduino, hook it up to a single relay. It's all powered over Wi-Fi, and that relay just controls the door latch. I mean, actually, it would be pretty easy to do.
Yeah, there you go. See, it's not that big of an infrastructure stretch. Back off, man. Play
True.
Nice.
Play nice. Yeah, so I don't know. It's cool. It's interesting. It's a
we just don't know a lot right now because no one's played with it. All we've seen are the videos.
Right.
So are you switching over to Android now? Are you like, I'm in? This is what I was waiting for. You're going to get your Moto X?
I'll be honest, James. Yeah, I've been thinking about this. And it's kind of do or die period for me right now. I'm switching to I'm getting ready to switch over to T-Mobile, right?
T-Mobes.
You know, pretty excited about that. Mm-hmm. And kind of getting off the whole subsidized plan, and it's leaving me in this weird open wide world of I've got to pay for my own iPhones from now on out. You know, and obviously they have their plan, but it's not, you know, I'd rather just pay for it up front and, you know, save the money that way and kind of go take that strategy and actually own the device so I can sell it at the end of it all and you know, subsidize myself effectively. And but it does kind of leave you very open to trying out different phones and trying out different stuff. And I'll be honest, if the iPhone or if the iWatch comes out or fails to come out and it's not amazingly awesome, it's kind of compelling.
Let's just set the bar where it needs to be set. My thought was, I went, man, the Moto X is on Republic Wireless. Moto 360 will probably work really well with it.
Yeah. See, and that's the thing is, it's like, what gets me is that it's the first watch that I've seen that I really like the way it looks. I really like the fact that it's a circular screen. I like the fact that it's the face and just kind of the look of it. I mean, it's from a fashion perspective. It's the first one that I've looked at and haven't been like, well, that looks stupid. You know, because I'll be honest, the square watch is always kind of. Has always kind of like softly chanted the whole like I've got a calculator watch thing, which is just, you know, nerdy beyond what I can do. And I'm not in love with the look of the Fitbit either. I actually don't like it at all, to be totally honest, from a style perspective. The only reason I get away with it is because the only reason I don't mind it is because people who know what it is or people who are interested in it, I come across as very, you know, health oriented and very like fitness oriented. Look, I'm tracking my steps. And so that's very hip and stylish right now. But I think just from a styling perspective, it's really ugly. And the Moto, you know, the Moto 360, my personal opinion kind of straddles the line between very tech forward and cool from that perspective, but you know, looks good. So you know, obviously Johnny Ives is he's a genius, and I've loved a lot of what he's done. So I'm confident. That's what I'm trying to say. But I think, you know, one of the things that you're going to see is that, you know, Samsung obviously has what they do, which is sort of your classic ugly boxy watch. You got the Pebble, which is a smaller package and much sleeker looking, but it's still boxy. You have whatever Google's, their Nexus watch is going to be. You're going to have all these different options out there, all these different varieties, and you'll really give people the opportunity to pick not just what band color they want, or not, you know, what casing they want, but really what do they want the screen to look like, how thick do they want it to be, what, you know, and the classic argument
features
of,
do they want a camera or not,
right? And you don't. I'll just answer that question for you easily. It's a stupid idea.
Google Glass, it'll take care of it for you.
Exactly. But it's one of those things where I sit there and I go, you know, I feel like the iPhone, they get away with a lot with having a single model, single color, and sort of that uniformity of it all. And I think they get away with it not because it's a good idea, but because it's Apple that's doing it. And I feel like the watch, maybe you can get away with that, but I feel like, man, I'm really hoping, and maybe I'm hoping beyond hope, that they open up the iPhone to third-party watches and have some sort of a secure thing, and then this is what happens. I'm hoping that Android, or that Google has Android Wear, and they go, we want to own this space too. And so what they do is they allow you to download an app that will turn an Android Wear watch into iPhone compatible. That's like fingers crossed. And then we'll see what – I think that's like – If both of them allow each other to play nice because they don't want to lose out on that market, that'll be awesome. I doubt it'll happen because I think they're both crazy. I think if Apple is willing to do that, I think somebody will build a third party accessory for the Android watch. And you know, it's entirely possible that somebody will build just a third party app. They'll do what they do with the Pebble. They'll build a Moto 360 app for iPhone, and all of a sudden you got everything you need. I don't know, maybe that's the route they'll go. I don't know.
The more important question is, how long do you think Pebble has to sell before they die?
Because I mean, come out and
I just.
What are you gonna say?
You know, right now this is starting up. We know Apple's working their thing, so they're doing fine in the anticipation part of it right now. But they're gonna get lapped so fast, and I don't get me wrong. I love them. I support them. I wear the watch, but I'm also like, yeah, this is not a long term strategy thing. I can see that. They've got to see that too.
Yeah. I think Android Wear launches in the summer. You'll probably see the iWatch launch before the iPhone as well, which would be sometime in the summer. I'm guessing that Pebble has about until the summer.
But I could see like a year from now, they're struggling.
I think as soon as other hardware shows up with full color screens and a decent battery life, there's going to be very little that they've got, you know, that they've got going for them. I think you're going to see it turn so fast for Pebble, where, you know, it'll go from their selling. And I got to believe that
they sold 400,000 last year or something like that. Not bad.
Yeah. It's not bad, except I think you're gonna. I think that this Christmas they're gonna sell, you know, 5 million iWatches or 5 million smartwatches, you know, globally, and I don't think they're gonna get swept up along with it. I think that there's just gonna be too much integration, you know, vertical integration with Android Wear into Android and the iWatch into the iPhone. Whereas if you already have one of those phones, man, you're gonna be like really hard pressed to justify. Right. And there are cool things that it do, but how are they gonna differentiate themselves from what Google just launched.
You know, something like Dropbox, where they, you know, they can get away with it because they need to interoperate between all the different operating systems, and that's why they're actually really well poised to do what they do. But with something like the iWatch, it's you're not going to be jumping between phones and operating systems. You're like, most people have one phone.
Right.
And they're like, I just want the watch that works the best with that one phone because that's what I own.
Right.
And I can really see it where, you know, it gets to a point where it's you buy your phone and bundled with it is the watch that goes with it.
Yeah.
I could see that.
That's an interesting sales approach. I never even thought about that, but I could totally see that too. You know, and I think I am willing to bet that you'll start, if you look at the overall numbers, this week you'll start to see Pebble sales start to taper off. And just as kind of the anticipation grows, especially because what they launched this week was they announced really cool looking hardware, theoretical hardware with none of the downsides, none of the battery life problems, none of the cost. There's nothing, just that look how awesome this is going to be. And that's now they don't have to sell against a real awesome watch. They have to sell against an incredible, amazing, beautiful looking, you know, theoretical watch. And if you want it right now and you can't wait, you know, 4 or 5 months, okay, you know, that's, you'll go with the Pebble still. But I feel like, you know, they it's sort of like when the iPhone, was it 5 or 4S or something, got left at a bar, and they instantly saw iPhone sales stall that weekend. Because they knew that the next one was coming. It was the 5, or no, it was a 4 when the 4 came out, because it was a body change. It was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, and I think you're going to see Pebble sales stall this week. And, you know, because people like me, you know, finally one of the ones that you wanted to get into the game is getting into the game, and they came out with a relative tour de force. They came out with, like I said, came out with none of the drawbacks and all of the benefits, and it looks amazing. It looks like everything you want it to be. Who knows how well it'll actually work when it gets here, but that's not what their goal was.
Leave it to Google to overpromise and underdeliver.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, I have a feeling that it won't be, you know, I have a feeling it won't be all bad news. I think the real problem will be if you want something that is as amazing as they pitched it to be, it's going to be expensive. And if you want something that's affordable, it'll have drawbacks, whether it's battery life or overall performance.
Green.
But I think
vibrancy. Yeah.
Right. I think if you're willing to spend, you know, if you're willing to buy a full blown, you know, Galaxy S5 and then couple it with a $500 Android Wear watch, I'll bet it'll be a pretty amazing little setup, and it'll be something that will really catch people's attention. You know, the thing that Apple will refuse to do is sell the $200 one that won't get people excited. Android's going to let people sell a $100 watch and just be like, well, this is a piece of garbage. And so the mass of people will try to buy something cheaper and will walk away saying, well, this is a piece of garbage, which is what the Android tablets have suffered from a long time, is that there is no bad alternative in the iPad world, whereas there's a lot of bad alternatives in the Android world, and they drown out the good alternatives. You know, so that's the biggest struggle I think Android will have long term. But like most things, if you're willing to shell out some good money, there's going to be somebody there with a pretty awesome solution for you.
Fair enough. Speaking of shelling out a lot of money, you got your Xbox One yet?
I don't. I am trying to win one through TechCrunch. I've got this like cool thing going on from where you can get a free pass to Disrupt New York. And they've given away an Xbox 2. I probably won't win because I've never won anything like that ever.
Did you say an Xbox 2?
No, an Xbox.
I want the Xbox 2.
Yes, I did. It's way better than the Xbox 1.
Twice as better.
I know. but they. But if I don't win it, I probably won't be getting it.
Oh, why not?
Because as cool as Titanfall looks, you can get it on a PC, and I hear it plays better.
All games are better on PC, I thought.
I know. Everybody knows that. I've been reading game developers like talking about the next gen systems. They're like, they're just not next gen systems. They're small iterative improvements. There's no reason to develop there. The big boys are not that excited about it. Well, Sony's trying to change that up, and boy oh boy, they might have just changed my mind.
Really?
Because this week, they announced a new project that they've been working on that'll work with the PlayStation 4, their latest gaming system, and it is called Project Morpheus. Morpheus, the god of dreams, for those of you who watched The Matrix, is a heads up, or not heads up, it's a headgear virtual reality gaming system that is pretty much what the Oculus Rift is trying to do. Its viewing angle is not as big as the Oculus Rift, where the Oculus Rift is like 120 degrees. This thing's only 90 degrees, which has some limitations. But they said that like the overall responsiveness of it is pretty amazing, very low latency. And the other thing that they said is that it works well with their handle things. So you know how Microsoft has the really cool... Yeah, Microsoft's got the really cool, Kinect, and the Wii has the Wiimotes. Well, they came up with their stupid solution that nobody bought into. Well, they're now doubling down on it, and they're basically like this. It uses the magic wand sensor to like have it has lights on the VR thing that kind of like does part of your head tracking. But you can also like, use the magic wands, and they actually showed a really cool demo. Where this dude, he's like sitting there, and he's like, basically, I'm like looking at my hands, like my hands are like armor plated hands, and like if you pull on the trigger, you can grab stuff. So he's like, he's grabbing swords, he's like swinging swords, and he can grab like a bow and arrow, and he's like giving this whole, it was awesome. He's giving this whole like interview, and he's like the guy sitting there like talking to him, and all of a sudden he goes, whoa, what is that? And he like you see him look up and he goes, oh my goodness, there's a dragon. And then like and he like looks down and then like cut to the actual like what he's seen. And there's this gigantic dragon sitting right in front of him. And he's like trying to aim his bow and arrow. He's like, oh my gosh, what is going on? Like he's just freaking out. I was like, that's you know what? That's what I was hoping for. That's what I want. I want one of these. It sounds to me like the Oculus Rift is still a better piece of hardware, in that it seems that they're really dedicated to making this thing just as amazing as as humanly possible, to them they keep coming back to there's no such thing as good enough, it's either good or not, it's cool. It's a big deal, and what it really is, what I've heard a lot of people say is like, what's the biggest deal about what Samsung is, or what Sony has done here is they've basically given devs, game developers, a real reason to start thinking seriously about developing VR games. Not just adapting simple games, but really taking advantage of this platform and building great stuff for it. And the reason why this is super compelling is because Oculus Rift has so far been the only people in this space. Valve has been getting some really cool stuff going, in their development rooms, in the background. But now you've got a gigantic developer with a huge platform already and a proven ability to sell it, along with the amazing tech demos that Oculus team is doing. It could, and now you just need content, and it gives people a compelling reason to do content. This week was just like
awesome.
Crazy. I know. This week was like a big thing for VR, virtual reality. Because how they always coming up with that like awesome scenario last week with putting your Tango like. Project Tango phone from Google that does all like it's aware of your surroundings and connecting it to an Oculus Rift. Well, I wasn't the only one thinking about that. turns out a company called Cortex, that's exactly what they're working on. They basically gutted an Oculus Rift dev kit and put a camera on it. Whoa. And put some sensors on it and put some processing unit stuff on it. And they're building full-on augmented reality. Yeah, I mean, the thing is ugly and it's clearly in prototype stage, but it sounds pretty awesome. And they're like, they're doing graphic overlays of like rooms and stuff. So like, there's stuff in your room. Like you're you know, if there's a chair there, like they can like disguise it as a troll. I don't know, whatever. But it's there. And they can do just overlays. They can, you know, fully immersive environments. And from what I've read, they're like, you know, just from an overall performance perspective, it's pretty bad. Especially now that Oculus Rift is out there and the Sony device is out there, it's just, it's not up to snuff, but from a proof of concept of what it can do and how it does it, it's pretty amazing. It's really exciting. And when you combine this with the kind of algorithms and games that they're developing for Project Tango over at the Google Plex, and you combine that with the amazing like work at building really great, really low latency content delivery to the Oculus Rift and to Sony, like if you can combine all these components together and the work that Cortex is doing to bring all this together, it's kind of compelling. And then finally, last but not least, as far as super awesome VR technology goes, Oculus Rift announced this week that they are not coming out with a purchasable consumer grade device. I know, it's kind of where I'm at. But what they've said is they last week they announced that they've run out of dev kits, which everybody thought was or components for dev kits, which everybody thought was, you know, indication we're coming to this big developer conference. They run out of components for dev kits. This is it. It's happening. They're launching a consumer grade product. No, they're not. They're launching Dev Kit 2. And what this is it takes the Oculus Rift, gives it a little bit of a different, a Dev Kit 1, as they're calling it now, gives it a little bit of a different package. But it gives a lot better processing unit, does stuff with the power supply that helps make that life easier. It's basically like overall a much better built, better, you know, fitting. Everything's better about it, better screen. And the big thing about this is that it also includes the technology that they use to make the Crystal Cove demo at CES work. So it's not just doing gyroscopic head tracking, but it's also doing locational head tracking, which is what's required to make games like Eve Valkyrie work. It's cool. It's really cool. I'm really excited about it because it's, you know, it's all awesome stuff. But this is my question.
Wow.
Have they made a mistake? Because if you were a dev and you bought the Dev Kit 1 and you were developing games for the Dev Kit 1, hoping that there would be some sort of profitability in the time investment that you're making, and then all of a sudden, instead of coming out with a consumer-grade device so you can sell your game, they come out with a Dev Kit 2, which has new cooler stuff that's theoretically backwards compatible but puts off the time even further. You know, that's annoying as a developer. On the flip side, their argument is they want something that nobody is going to be turned off by. They don't want to launch it too soon and say, hey, our latency is nearly low enough, our screen resolution is nearly low enough, our frame rate is nearly low enough. They want to say when we hit all of our necessary points, when it's right, then we're going to launch it. That way, there's no bad press about it because everybody thinks it's awesome. Nobody gets sick. Have they made a mistake?
So your question is, they have all these devs developing for the first dev kit, and now they upgraded to the next one, and so now they're working on old stuff, right? Sorry, well, just making sure I understand your question.
So the devs developed all these games for Dev Kit 1, under the premise that they could sell the game eventually. Now they can still sell the game, but they're going to have to wait however much longer before Oculus is ready to launch a consumer grade that incorporates this new technology. And the question is, you know, so the argument is that devs are going to be upset about this. It's going to disincentivize devs because they want to make money, and Oculus, you know, the more they invest and the longer it takes, the harder it is to make money. On the flip side, Oculus is saying consumers are going to be way more pleased and they're not going to be turned off by what we deliver because our delivery is going to be way better. And the concern is that if there's no devs, there's no content, and your consumers won't be really happy about it.
Well, I think part of what's playing into this is everyone recognizes that it's pretty darn awesome. And you want to be in that app store when people, or whatever it is, you know, you want to be available to buy, you know, or be, you know what I mean, available to be bought when it becomes available. Sure, you're peeved by it, you're upset. The core of your game is done, though. Now it's upgrading graphics and stuff. I'm sure that's annoying, but the potential upside of it is so huge that you're like, you do it anyways.
Okay.
I mean, what are you gonna? Right. You've already spent all this time invested in it and making games. Then they come out and say, "Oh, sorry, some updates, we can't do it yet." You're gonna be like, you know what? I really didn't want to make $1 million on this, and I've already spent $100,000 developing it. I'm good. I'm just gonna stop. Yeah. You know, no one's gonna say that. They'll say, "Yeah, let's put in another $50K to make sure it's perfect." I would,
right?
Because you know, when you first do it, there's gonna be 12 good games, and you're hoping that you're one of those 12.
Right? Because I it's funny. I mean, I sit here and go, maybe I'm an outlier. I tend to like to think that I'm not an outlier so much as.
That.
Well, yeah. Well, I would say
launch,
I'm.
Don't worry about it.
I'm not an outlier so much as I like to think I'm ahead of the curve. I think that's what I like to believe. I think with this, I agree. I'm probably going to buy one. I'm probably going to buy at least a couple of games. And I realize that it also means I'll probably have to upgrade my friggin' computer. This is going to be a capital investment. I'm emotionally preparing for this and saving for it because I'm sure it's going to be rough when it comes. And I'm going to be like, I'm going to want to do it day one and I won't be able to. But yeah, like you said, I'm going to want to buy games and I'm going to want to buy the best, coolest games. I'm going to want to buy Titanfall for my Oculus Rift. Oh my gosh. That actually sounds amazing. I think that there are going to be enough people like me early on that have been waiting for this, and there's enough excitement and pent up demand. And I think that, you know, honestly, I think I think that the big reason why that the video game consoles aren't selling as well as they should be, I can't remember if we actually talked about that article or not. Did we talk about that, or have I talked about that offline?
I think offline.
Okay. Because one of the big concerns right now is that neither the PlayStation or the Xbox are selling as well as their last generation at this point. You know, everybody's making a big deal about the horse race between the two of them, but they're losing the race against their ghosts. And one of the big thoughts is that there just wasn't a big enough improvement that, you know, between just overall how powerful the hardware was in the PlayStation 3 and Xbox One, and the fact that video game studios optimized for the hardware for so long. It took like 5 years before, you know, an average or, you know, a decent gaming desktop would, at a price point, compete on graphics. Because it was unoptimized, the games weren't optimized for the hardware, and so the hardware had to be way better. It had to be better than, you know, it had to be a large portion better than what was in the Xbox and PlayStation, and it took a long time for it to get to that point where they'd be better at a reasonable price or at the same price point. Where that was true in the last generation, this generation, that's not true. The hardware that you can buy for the same price in a desktop is the same as what you can get on an Xbox or PlayStation 3, and so or 4, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and so, you know, what's happening is they're not selling as well, and it's the idea is that it's not a price point issue. It's not the fact that people can't afford it. It's that they're choosing to not upgrade yet because it's not a compelling enough reason. They're not. It's not that they don't have the money to spend. It's that they're spending it elsewhere. And so if you can come along and really capitalize on what people are waiting for, which is something new and exciting and cool and compelling, I'm kind of in the – it could be VR. I think as far as the new exciting technology goes, that one's pretty new and exciting. And everybody's kind of like, come on. We've been waiting for this to get to be awesome for 30 years. It's almost here. I can't wait. I think people are going to drop some big bucks, surprising amounts of money on – making this happen. I think Sony's solution is going to be pretty awesome because it's going to be plug and play. You plug in the TV, charge your little head unit, drop it on your face, and you're playing. Even though it may not be as good as the Oculus Rift, I think it might be a very compelling competitor to the Oculus Rift. But I think from overall game development perspective, I think a lot of games are going to, once you kind of work out how to do it and what makes a good game, I think that it'll definitely benefit both companies. So very exciting.
I agree.
Oh, yeah. Are you going to get one, James?
Let me think about that.
Mr. I don't own a TV.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that's my alternative. That'd be kind of fun if Jesse and I could throw on some Oculus goggles and watch a movie together. It was like, it's a big screen, and we're just like sitting on the couch.
Yeah. 3D,
surround,
super
sound
immersive.
Kind of stuff. That'd be kind of pretty funny. I could see that. If I could hook it up to, I don't need it necessarily to be 3D, but just act as that television so I can play my N64 again. Like, that'd be kind of cool.
That would be really cool. That would be very awesome.
But I mean, it's not necessarily using it the way it's intended, where you looking around does nothing, the screen just moves with you.
Yeah.
I might have some use case for that. Totally.
I mean, it's funny. It's funny. I mean, as much as I really want
Yes.
I don't know. One of the things is that gets me is like everybody keeps talking about immersive or the feeling of being there. We want you to – it has to have a certain there-ness to it is what everybody like keeps talking about. And I keep sitting here going, this is just the best 3D solution that I think you can come up with. It's highly individualized and, yeah, it's expensive. But, I mean, that's what I'm excited for, and please give it to me now. Everything else that goes along with it is just awesome. It's bread and butter. I mean, it maybe becomes the compelling selling point and the only reason you use it eventually. But I think just on its own, like you said, just the screenless universe, I think there's something compelling there. I think it's eventually where we go. You've got Google Glass, and well, we've talked about this before. This is the augmented reality life. And, I think this is where it goes, and I think this is a big step in that direction. If you got a pair of screens that go over your face with great sound, I mean, we could do the podcast where we'd be looking at – actually, it would be really stupid. We'd be looking at, like, 3D versions of ourselves with these giant things on our face just talking to each other.
Wait, why would that be dumb?
I'm coming at you. I don't know. It's good. You know what, James? You make a compelling argument. It would be awesome. What am I talking about?
Of course, the weird part would be like, I couldn't see any articles. You have to show them to me. But we can figure that out.
Yeah, just how I'm holding it up.
Quit moving. I can't read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be... Mm.